Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. I'm Christian. He is Rod the Pod. And Rod, we are excited today to be talking about some serious estate maximization. How are you, by the way?
Hey, I'm doing great. You?
I'm good. I'm just excited to be thinking about my inevitable death and how I'm going to get money to the next generation.
Yeah, every day. We should all be thinking about that every day of our lives.
Okay, so here's the thing, Rod. We do have to think about that a lot. We deal in life insurance.
Yep.
And we deal in investments, but we deal in like wealth building and wealth transfer. So this is just like a day in the life of Rod, right?
Right. Yep. That's a true story.
All right. Well, anyway, sometimes I think about it though, and I'm like, gosh, like who wants to talk about this stuff, Rod? Who wants to at least the death part, right? So it's fun to talk about building wealth and like creating, you know, doing that kind of stuff, but it's not very fun to talk about this. Like it might even be okay if you focus on like this idea of generational wealth that goes on to my kids and grandkids. Like that's kind of fun. As long as you just like leave out the fact that, you know, you've got to die in order for this stuff to happen.
Yeah. Well, here's what often happens that I see is we have clients who they do get excited about investing and they actually do really well with it. And it's almost like they get bored, kind of like in the way that Michael Jordan got bored or Tiger Woods got bored. They're doing well. But it's like, there's got to be more to this. And that's often the point where this kind of stuff becomes more front and center, because it's like, okay, how can I adjust my swing a little bit? How can I go try out baseball a little bit? You know what I mean?
That's what estate maximization is. Okay. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I'm with you, Rod. I like it.
It's not the starting point. I think we can all agree with that. Right.
Okay.
If someone's saying, "Hey, I'm catching the vision of this alternative investing thing, I'm going to start with estate maximization, or I'm going to start with asset protection." You know, that's not usually where they start. It's like, "Hey, let's build something a little bit first, and then we'll add these additional pieces to it."
Well, Rod, here's the thing, though. You know what our friend Stephen R. Covey says, right? He says to start with the end in mind.
Yep.
So maybe we should be starting with estate maximization. Maybe envisioning the incredible estate that we're going to be passing on, and then we just like build it backwards. It's not such a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, in the sense that not that you're building all the pieces yet as a starting point, but that you're anticipating it. It's part of the mindset, right? It should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So as a reminder, we're talking about number 6 in our 6 core benefits: leverage, velocity, cash flow, tax optimization, asset protection, and today's episode is focused on estate maximization. So, Rod, as always, let's not take anything for granted. Tell the listeners what estate maximization actually is, at least from our perspective.
Sure. I would say that, I mean, the easy starting point is, and this is the part that most people think about and maybe end with, is estate tax. Nobody wants to pay estate tax. Nobody. I've never met a single person that says, yeah, that's what I want as part of my planning. They want to avoid it at all costs. So,
okay, wait. They want to avoid it, but I'm not sure if it's at all costs.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, that's at least, I'm at least going to question that part. In fact, sometimes I'm like, they want to avoid it unless it's at any cost.
That's a good point.
So there are those people. Now, to be fair, like that's probably the kind of person we were dealing with 10 or 15 years ago, right? And today, a lot more people have like a bigger vision, right? So part of their vision is this estate maximization element. But anyway, so I didn't mean to derail you.
No,
okay, we're back to what estate maximization is.
Yeah, so let's start with estate tax. Let's avoid as much as possible paying the estate tax. And then, but it's more than that. And I think that's what I want to emphasize the most right now is there are a lot of additional things that people should be thinking about as it relates to passing your estate on to the next generation, including things like liquidity, just the efficient transfer of assets. Like not only where are they going, like will dictate where it goes, but how it goes and the planning and even communication while you're living so that things are clear to your kids, to whatever the charity, whoever the assets are going to, so that there is, again, the efficiency, not just in the documents and not just in the thought process of like me as the one who's passing the assets along, but across the board, a lot of different things that we can talk about.
We'll get into that in a few more minutes, Rod, but I can just tell you from my own experience, having been down the wills and trusts, like kind of more in depth over the last, well, I guess it was early last year that we did it. And it had been, you know, a handful of years since I had like gotten into it in detail. And man, it's just a lot. So there's a lot more there than you probably think about. And to be, what's interesting there is like when your attorney sits down with you, very often they're not thinking about the tax element at all, unless you ask them to, right? Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot, even if you eliminated anything to do with the tax component, right?
Yep, like, absolutely.
Anyway, now I shouldn't say that they're like, I don't mean that they're like, hey, you know, own everything personally and don't worry about getting anything out of your state. I think any attorney is at least doing that baseline stuff. Mm-hmm. But so often that's what it is. It's just like, here are kind of the way that we do things. And again, even that is pretty complex. It takes some time, effort, energy, emotion, man, all that. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, absolutely. That's what estate maximization is, work.
Yeah.
At least a little bit, at least a little.
Yeah. But you don't have to take it on all at once. It. Right. Build into it, but do it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the role of estate maximization specifically within wealth preservation. That's probably where we get into this conversation about how do I keep as much money as possible, right? Yeah. So maximizing my estate, we talk about the financial aspect of it, but there's a logistical aspect. But here we're talking primarily about preserving my wealth, getting it from one generation to the next by eliminating or minimizing is probably the better way to put it, minimizing the amount of tax I'm having to pay. Mm-hmm. And specifically, we're talking about estate tax, but the reality is income tax plays into that too.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
Depending on assets and things like that, like, you know, if I have qualified money, like that's still going to the next generation, still going to be paid on an income tax level.
Yep.
So, okay. Rod, what are some of the things we need to be thinking about when we talk about estate maximization within the role of wealth preservation?
Yeah, so this gets to, we hinted already a minute ago, is just the wills and trusts, gifting, things like that. So
don't take anything for granted. I know you're not an attorney, Rod, but what's a will and a trust at a just really high level?
Yeah.
Will and trust. And then we can talk about why they're important as we go further.
Sure. So a will is just dictating where things are going to go, right? You have assets, you have things in the will, you're dictating where those are going to go.
A document, like a written document.
It can, and wills can be just really
handwritten
basic.
Document.
It can even be
a handwritten document. No, it has to be handwritten.
It has to be.
Just kidding. Okay. A written document though, something that's on, that's, I was going to say it again, on paper, something that is on something, a document.
Yeah.
Any kind of document.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the first part.
But a will can't actually make the transfer happen. So that's why we often talk about even basic living trusts. A trust, when combined with a will, can actually make the transfer happen. So in other words, if it's just a will, you have to actually, when the person dies, you have to go through probate, which means you get in front of a judge. The judge deems the will worthy, or, you know, takes on like challengers. Is anybody challenging this will? That kind of thing. And so, it has to go through the court system to actually say, okay, yes, that bank account can now be transferred into this other person's name, or the real estate can the deed can be transferred. The will, when you combine it with a trust, now the trust actually has the ability to make those transfers happen. So the bank account is owned, or the real estate is owned in the trust, and now the trust has all of the instructions to go to for, so the assets can be transferred to the beneficiaries of the trust. So even a really basic trust, I think, is important, because then you avoid probate, which means you avoid the cost of going to the court. You avoid the time that it takes. 6 to 12 months is on average probably what you'd have, even if it went really smoothly, 6 months. So, but then the trust allows you to avoid probate, and the transfer can happen just within the trust.
So what you're saying, Rod, is that a will without a trust is like the peanut butter without the jelly. Unless you're like a peanut butter and banana person, then it's without the bananas. But one way or another, like, it's got to have more. It just has to.
Yeah, right? The punch just doesn't quite carry it if you don't have both.
Okay. Good. So that's clear. Make sure you have a will and a trust. I do think that's important, because a lot of times we just like throw out this terminology, and most people just don't have a good reference for what that actually is and does. So very clearly, the will defines what we want to happen. The trust actually takes care of the logistical elements of it happening without going through probate.
Yep.
Did you talk about what probate is?
I did.
Okay. Well, where was I during that, Rod? I must have been like sleeping or something. I think I was just eagerly anticipating this next section that we're going to get into, Rod.
Okay.
And so like, whew, sometimes that happens. Okay. So we've got our wills and trusts in place, right? We're actively working on that. Maybe the question is, why is optimizing estate taxes even important? In other words, what are the repercussions of not doing it? Maybe we'll go both ways. The benefits and the repercussions.
Okay.
Give us some of your thoughts.
Yeah. So the way I just described a really basic trust will make the transfer easier, right? But it doesn't necessarily avoid the tax. In fact, it doesn't, right? This kind of living trust doesn't.
Okay. And this is a misnomer. Gosh, Rod, I can't tell you how many. Even like relatively sophisticated investors will be like, oh, I'll just put it into trust. Like, mm-hmm. Suddenly, you've just done everything you need to do. You've just like accomplished all of your objectives. Like, the reality is that most often that alone is not going to do anything for the tax. Now, there are situations where, like, we think about like an irrevocable life insurance trust, you put it in the islet and it now removes it from the estate, and therefore you're eliminating estate tax on that element.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's a relationship there that has to be understood and respected.
Yeah. And so there are obviously different types of trusts, and we're not going to try to cover all of them, but just kind of categorically, what I was describing is what's called a revocable trust, which just means that I, as the person who created it, the grantor, have the ability to go back and make changes and control the assets inside of the trust and all of that. And generally speaking, control or access to the assets directly by the grantor means it's going to stay in that person's trust or that person's estate for estate tax purposes.
Hey, Rod, I was just thinking about something, and this is maybe a little bit off topic, but we get this question occasionally, and I'm curious how you normally answer it. Hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot here, Rod.
All right, we'll see.
Okay, here we go. If you do a bad job, we'll just edit it out.
Okay.
Just kidding, no edits. This is uncut.
Okay.
Uncut.
Here goes.
Okay. Here it goes, Rod. So sometimes we have people who ask us, clients or potential clients who are utilizing the investment optimizer strategy, which of course we know is to optimize investments. I know, weird how that works, but we use the life insurance as the opportunity fund. We go and invest. We create this additional layer of profitability. Great. But sometimes the question comes up like, how does that integrate? How does this now like growth thing that we're doing integrate with this element of estate maximization? I can't own it in an islet, right? Because if it's in an irrevocable life insurance trust, I'm suddenly not able to use that.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is like, I mean, it's in line with our topic, but what's your advice to people as they're using like life insurance and some of the like the key strategies and ways that we use them? But then we also need to integrate that in some ways with this idea of maximizing estates.
Yeah, that's a critical question. And it's a trap in some sense, because somebody's being responsible. They go meet with an attorney to take care of this estate planning, at whatever level they are, they mentioned, oh, I have life insurance. And the immediate response from the estate planning attorney is, oh, we need to put that in.
Yeah, you should own that. Yeah, that's how you should own it.
If you don't, what happens is the life insurance pays out, but it pays out inside of your estate first before it's calculated for the estate tax.
Okay, right? So let's play that out really quick, just because I think it's important. Let's say that I own a $5 million life insurance policy. That's the death benefit on it. Mm-hmm. And even if I have I've got a $3 or $4 million, maybe I've got a $10 million estate, like suddenly when I pass, my estate is going to include not just the cash in the life insurance policy. Right. Now it's including the actual death benefit, which could have a negative, like obviously it's really, like it's powerful to have liquid money that's right there.
Yeah.
But the last thing we want is to have all of that now put us into, you know, an estate tax situation or just have to, you know, push 40% of it out the window.
Right. Yep. And that's why the estate tax, these estate planning attorneys, it's such an automatic thing for them. They see life insurance, they want to put it in an irrevocable life insurance trust because now the death benefit, when it pays out, it's going into that trust and that trust is outside of the estate, so it doesn't get included. So it's understandable why they do. However, if I'm the person that owns the investment optimizer policy, I have to be really clear with the attorney and say, okay, let's just take a pause here real quick. This is what I'm doing with the policy. And with what you're saying, is there any way that I can continue to do what I'm talking about and have it in the irrevocable trust? And kind of like you talked about, it's not that there's no way, because I think about a client who has the investment optimizer policies inside of a trust because he was at the point where he was moving all of those assets into the trust. So it wasn't an isolated islet, irrevocable life insurance trust. It was an irrevocable trust that owns things like life insurance and real estate and these other things, these alternative assets that he invests in. And that's now the right way to own the investment optimizer policy, because if you're using loans for the investing, you need it to be owned in the same category as where the investments are being owned. So that really is what gets back to the heart of your question, is it just depends on where the assets are. If you're owning them personally and or in LLCs, but it still all comes back to you, it's all still inside of your estate, then you need to own your investment optimizer policy outside of the trust. But when you're ready to move everything into the trust, that's when it's appropriate to move the investment optimizer policy in at the same time.
Okay. So, and then of course, the other thing you can be thinking about is just as you get older and as you're using things differently, might make sense to just transition, right?
Yep.
If it becomes a situation where I'm using that strategically for my investing, and you know, you can obviously like separate, right? You could own life insurance specifically for the death benefit element,
yeah,
and you could own it specifically for the wealth creation part of it, like we're talking about here. So
yeah,
there's a lot of ways to do that, but basically it's going to be some combination of the things we talked about, right? I like the idea that you talked about, and as you get more structured, more organized and maybe more sophisticated a little bit, you can go to this route where you're owning everything in this way. And then you have the freedom to invest just like you would at any other time, because everything's owned that way. Right.
Yep.
And now anyway, but most people aren't that way, at least not early on. Right. So they're going to own the policy in their personal name. And over time, they might move to some model like that, or they might just, as they get older and maybe they're not as active investing through the policy anymore, they could transition that into an islet, you know, in their, you know, 70s or 80s.
And, yeah.
And now, like, there's some risk in that, right? Because if I die before that, then that policy ends up in the estate. But again, if I want to have it there and be able to invest through it, then, you know, sometimes I have to like take it or leave it.
Yeah. And kind of talking from this element of pros and cons, the con to the irrevocable, because an irrevocable trust sounds amazing, right? I just move all my assets over there. It's outside of my estate. I don't have to worry about this stuff, right? Well, but what that comes with is I can no longer directly make any changes, make any moves with those assets, I have to work through a trustee. I'm still the grantor, right? So I still have a say. I can even replace the trustee. Like, I can do these things, but it's not.
There's now, more now nuance to it. Yeah, there's a little more red tape in the way.
Yes.
That I have to be considering, right?
Yeah. And so you have to be ready for that. The benefit has to be valuable enough to you that you're ready to take on these other pieces for the rest of your life, really.
Well, and here's the thing, though. If you have a $50 million estate, then it's probably going to be worth your time because you're going to be saving a huge amount in on that back end. Okay, so that brings us to the next point, Rod. What are the repercussions of not considering estate maximum, not looking at our estate and finding ways to make it pass on as tax optimally as possible?
Yeah, well, the classic example of that is the artist formerly known as Prince, who was, I don't know what he was worth, 40, 50, 400, I don't know what he was worth.
A lot, yeah, probably a lot.
It was a lot. And still a lot of royalties still being paid out, you know, post his death. But he had absolutely nothing. He didn't have a will. He didn't have a trust. Wild. He didn't have anything. So in his case, what happens is a judge just decides, like, oh, well, you know, these.
That doesn't sound so bad, Rod. Let's just have someone we don't know, has no idea of what my world looks like. We'll just have them decide how things are going to look.
Yeah, sounds good.
I can see why that's a problem.
Yeah. But that's it. Someone has to decide. So they just put it in front of a judge and the judge decided.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
That's obviously an extreme example. I don't know many people that die without even a will.
That's true. I mean, young people, obviously, but sure. Once you've kind of gotten established, like most people realize, like, okay, I at least need to have those core elements in place. Even if it's for no other reason than to, you know, define what I want for my kids if I have children, right? Because estate planning, of course, is not just about the money. And that's that's probably what I was trying to hit on at the right on the outset is that it's estate maximization is mostly thought about as money, but there's like a very definitive human element that goes with
it. Yeah.
And we kind of have to be thinking about both.
Yeah. We talk often about how it's like a culture. To the extent that I want to dictate what happens to, again, not just the actual assets, but if I prepare my kids, for example, in this kind of mode of this financial philosophy and other things, it's building a culture so that it actually gets carried out appropriately, right? Because you can only do so much in a trust to dictate, okay, this is exactly how it's going to happen, because you can actually push yourself into a corner. So just say, for example, that you say, well, this always has to stay in cash, right? But maybe there's a time in the future where cash goes away, like doesn't exist anymore. And so then what do you do? Well, the trust doesn't allow for that kind of flexibility. So there has to be some, I've seen some kind of silly examples like that where they were so specific in what they were dictating in the trust that it created problems later on the road, down the road. And it's like, well, now what do we do with it?
Okay, Rod. So I want to switch gears a little here, right? Because we've been talking about like what happens if, like, what are the problems that come if we don't do anything from an estate planning perspective?
Yeah.
But I want to talk about some ways that we can actually maximize the estate. What are some things that we can be actively doing to put ourselves in a better position? Maybe both. I mean, obviously we've talked about wills and trusts and that's kind of a given, but maybe we can talk about ways that we can be more thoughtful and focused so that when we are passing money to the next generation, it is done in the best way possible.
Sure.
Where do we start?
I mean, let's talk about asset types, right? So you alluded earlier, an inefficient asset to pass along is a qualified plan, money they need, any money in an IRA or anything like that, primarily because it all went in there pre-tax. The government is going to get the tax at some point. if you were above 72, you were paying the required minimum distribution, but there still can be a large asset there. Well, when you pass it, it's very specific. Even if the kids wanted to leave it in a qualified plan for a period of time, it's a very short period of time. You can't just avoid paying the tax for as long as you actually used to be able to.
Hmm. Okay, Rod. So it's what we're getting to here. What we're getting to now is this idea that while there are things we can just do by going to an attorney, and there's strategies that we can put in place, right? Like there are specific and obviously using sophisticated trust work is the most like, I don't know. I've seen some attorneys do some pretty amazing things on large estates where they're able to get creative and, you know, help people pass money on. What kind of goes back to the old adage, right? Own nothing, control everything.
Yeah.
The more that I control but don't own, now I have that opportunity. Again, I'm getting it out of my estate. Now it's passing on the next generation. But that's a difficult element. So there are some things that we can do there. And maybe we should touch on some of those things. Maybe it's things like charitable planning. I know that if you're someone who's now, I should say this too. If you're not charitably inclined, now that sounds terrible. I'm not charitably inclined. But if you're not somebody who is like actively thinking about getting money to charity, maybe it's really the focus is getting it to my family, then, you know, using like a charitable remainder trust may or may not be as effective. But one of the things we know that it does is the government gives us incentives, tax benefits for doing that. Yep. And so what oftentimes happens is that I can be charitable, get a tax break, pass on as much money or more to my family. But instead of that money going to the IRS, I'm now putting it to a charity. And so even if it's not directly having, you know, bringing more money in my pocket, which by the way, a lot of times it actually will and does. But what's kind of nice is you can do both things. So anyway, that's one example that comes to my mind. But what we're kind of getting into now is not the stuff that I can do at the end, like as I like just from like a planning perspective. It's really now about what I'm investing in, what I own, because the underlying asset is going to dictate how it goes to the next generation. Unless, of course, I combine it like with life insurance where I put it in an ILA, right? So there's things I can do from that. But what you're talking about now is, let's talk about the actual investments that I'm doing stuff with.
Yeah.
Right.
And
because there's a big difference between an IRA and a piece of real estate.
Absolutely.
At least from moving from one generation to the next standpoint.
Yeah. And let's talk about real estate. And that's actually good news, because I would say most, if not all of the people that we work with invest in real estate at some level, right? Even if they have other things they invest in, real estate is usually a big part of that. And real estate, maybe right next after life insurance, is the most efficient asset passing along. And there are a couple of different reasons, but the biggest reason is because of what they call the step up in basis, right? So you can have purchased a piece of real estate, you can have owned it for a long time, so your basis was really low compared to the value that it is today. And if you sold it while you're living, you would have a lot of capital gains tax, unless you did 1031 exchange or something like that. But if you didn't, a large capital gains tax. But if instead you die while you own it, now all of a sudden that really low basis immediately gets moved up to the current market value, and there's no capital gain tax to your family if they turned around and sold it the next day.
And that's crazy, right?
Like it is.
You think about someone potentially owning real estate for 30, 40 years, like the ability to just invest, like think about the difference between that and an IRA. Okay. So there's no way that I could do that in a qualified account. But yet what's really interesting about that is the talking heads will tell you that the best place that you can put your money immediately is to get it into your qualified retirement accounts. That's like, that is the narrative. Retirement accounts, retirement accounts, retirement accounts. And again, I always stop to like pause and say, I do see a place for retirement accounts. Like there's an element of where that can be useful. The problem is that for so many people is the starting point, right? And so if you're just comparing and contrasting, there's no way to avoid the taxes on the money that I put into a qualified account. Like Mm-hmm. There's just really no way to accomplish that, right? Whereas if you were just to put those two apples to apples and say, okay, well, one, real estate's giving me significant tax savings and benefits on the front end, right? Just like even more so than what I'm getting by putting money into my 401k or defined benefit plan or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm getting like real additional benefits right on the front end. But then over here in the qualified world, I'm going to have to pay the tax at some level, no matter what.
Yeah.
Either me or my kids, they're going to have to pay it. What's really incredible about this idea is that something like real estate actually comes full circle. And now and with the 1031 exchange, I could literally invest for 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. have incredible gains and never pay a dime of taxes. And especially if I, you know, decide to own that outside of my estate, like it can be just an incredibly powerful way to create that generational snowball effect.
Yeah.
And by the way, not doing it is, you know, a huge differentiator. Like, I genuinely believe that that's like why we have these like, you know, wealthy families, and like they've been smart from generation to generation, yep. instead of someone like, as an example, Prince, who like just a big chunk of his wealth. Now, maybe he didn't care, right? But a big chunk of his wealth was just wiped out, gone to the government. Gone.
Yeah.
Like that's just like that. So just the difference in what we own and what we invest in as a starting point has a huge impact on estate maximization. So it kind of goes back to that idea that I talked about earlier. You actually do need to start with the end in mind in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. If I start with the end in mind, then I can be thinking about owning and investing in assets that aren't just good for me today, but that are also good for me in the future.
Yep, absolutely. And in this, we've obviously already talked about the timing of the sale of that piece of real estate matters. Let's also talk about timing as it relates to some of these other things. So like with the charitable remainder trust or some of these other more sophisticated estate maximization strategies, you're better off learning about them early on, because some of them you have to actually have the trust or whatever in place before you sell the asset, or else, sorry, not even sell it, before you identify a buyer.
Right. Yeah.
And in some cases, multiple years before that time comes in order to get the full benefit of the strategy. And so being really open with your tax attorney, for example, about, okay, not only are these the assets, but these are my plans moving forward with the assets. Because if you're just going to own the real estate till you die anyway, then great, it doesn't matter. And same with a business or whatever. But if you're planning to sell that business and your tax attorney knows that, then there can be an exchange of ideas as it relates to that when, like, long before you're actually ready to sell. And that's the right time to be positioning things in a way so that you get all of those advantages.
Okay. So that's a really good point. And this has happened my entire career. People don't think about it until they have now their business under contract, and they're like, okay, I've got my business under contract to sell. It's going to be, you know, I'm getting $8 million and Rod Christian, I got this. How do I just make sure I don't pay taxes on this?
Yeah.
Well, it's like you don't at that point, mm-hmm. right? If, however, we start talking 3 years earlier, then suddenly there's some strategic planning that can be done they'll have like a really significant impact. Now, you know, most often you're not going to eliminate taxes, but you can do a lot to minimize Absolutely. Those or optimize the amount that we're having to pay. And again, like, I say this all the time, Rod, but taxes have probably the biggest impact on return. I mean, obviously, like, I guess the underlying asset, but right behind that is taxation. Mm-hmm. It can have a really positive impact on, you know, creating additional return, or it can be a huge drag and suddenly take great, you know, just like eliminate a huge chunk of the returns that we've worked hard to get. Okay, Rod. So I want to talk about how estate maximization, and I've alluded to this a little bit, but how and why estate maximization integrates into the invest with benefits philosophy. So we always talk about it as I listed out number six, right? And there's mm-hmm. a reason. Now it's not a list of importance, yeah. right? Just because, however, I do think the order matters. And the way that we think, because obviously you hit on this earlier, it doesn't make sense to, maybe a little bit, but it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to spend a huge amount of time on planning my estate if I don't have any assets, yeah. right? If I've like not built anything, then, you know, it probably still makes sense to have like the basics and you know, in play there, but I don't need to spend a lot of time on that. So mm-hmm. there is an order, and the starting point is we're actually learning how to invest.
Yeah.
And not only learning how to invest, we're talking about now learning how to invest and what to invest in mm-hmm. that will give us an opportunity to create the best returns and the least amount of tax today, but also that same thing in the future. So that's why we have them listed out at leverage, velocity, cash flow, tax optimization. That's critical, right? It comes in. And again, there's a reason why it's there. Asset protection. And finally, estate maximization. But this part's important because it brings the whole thing full circle. I think of it this way. I can be a prolific wealth builder my entire life, right? I could go throughout my life and build $100 million net worth. And then just by not having taken care of that last part, this estate maximization benefit that we need to be thinking about, if I don't do that, I'm going to wipe out 40% of my estate, right? So like, I think of it in terms of not just money, but in terms of like work, effort, sacrifice, mm-hmm. opportunities for my family or the people yeah. that I care about. So it's more than just like, hey, now I don't have as much money to pass on. It's like, what could that money have done at the next level to continue to, you know, have, you know, leave a legacy to the people and things that I care about the most?
Absolutely. And I think that brings to mind also, and again, you touched on it earlier, the purpose behind the life insurance matters, because again, if you're using it for investment optimizer or capital avalanche or whatever, then obviously you may treat it differently. But let's just say someone in hearing this, they say, okay, I hear what you're saying about the irrevocable trust. And I just don't ever want to do that. I don't ever want to be in a position where I have to work through somebody else to make my investments or to move these assets around or change title on this yeah. property or whatever. I just want to be able to do it myself. So I don't forever see myself getting into that irrevocable trust category. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe a second best strategy is the life insurance, right? And so you could have, they call it a survivorship policy, which just means that it pays out when the second spouse passes away and the actual estate is now taking, like making that transfer and put that into an irrevocable trust. So going back to your $100 million example, you have the $100 million, it all can still go to your heirs, even if you don't do anything on the irrevocable trust type of thing, like moving the assets out of your estate. If you had $40 million worth of life insurance that pays out at the same time into that irrevocable trust, now the kids have that, they pay the tax, they move on and still have the full $100 million. So again, it can get really sophisticated, but it doesn't have to in order to accomplish a lot of the same goals.
Maybe we should remind people, life insurance is inherently income tax-free. Right. So that's why we talk about it initially. It's two things that are really powerful from an estate maximization standpoint. It's income tax free always. And well, I shouldn't say always, with some very, very, very rare exceptions. I just want to make sure I hit on. But basically, it's always income tax free. And number two, it's liquid.
Yep.
Right. Those two elements give us like a tremendous amount of optionality, we'll call it, right? Mm-hmm. So now we can determine the right decisions that we need to make without having to be, you know, those stressors come in. If I need to take care of something, some sort of debt quickly for the estate or the taxes, I don't have to worry about selling quickly because now I've done that. Okay, so we've talked about life insurance and real estate, and there are other assets that also receive a step up in basis that are can be really powerful things to be investing and thinking about. But I believe that should be kind of at the core of your investment philosophy is those types of things, just because, again, not only are they getting the tax benefit at the end of life, you're also getting them all throughout, right? Like, mm-hmm. we talk about real estate ad nauseum, just because we have those, you know, additional benefits of depreciation and that kind of stuff. Okay, Rod, is there anything else that we want to hit on as it relates to the importance of estate maximization before we close up today?
Maybe just this, that it's never too early to start thinking about it and learning about it and even getting started, because we talked about the really basic initial steps of get a will, get a basic revocable trust. And then as you go, it's going to make, you know, it'll make more sense to add different pieces as you go. But get started, I would say.
Okay. I love it. Directly from the mouth of Rod the Pod, get started. I love it, Rod. Okay. Thanks everyone for hanging out with us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights Podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.